Welcome to episode 258 of the McSauce Comic Book Podcast. My name is Paul McGinty. With me, as always, are Ian the Sauce Sharpley.
Hello.
And Matt Cassell.
Hello.
It is Monday night, November 5th, and tonight we are going to bring you the McSauce State of the Comic Book Union. We're going to talk about a couple comics in particular on my behalf, and we're going to talk about how we feel about the state of the comic book industry, how we feel, what we're reading, what we're not reading, where we're getting our comic book news, the lack of comic book news.
I think it sort of stems from we were going to do a big full what you've been reading segment, and me and Matt have been having a lot of problems, so I think we're going to delve into the root of those problems.
But before we do any delving, we are going to delve into housekeeping with Ian Sharpley.
Go to McSauce.com. You can check out the whole breadth of comic strips that we've done over the years. We were doing the comic strip since 2008, so we have an abundance of jokes and cartoons, laughs, all kinds of different stuff on McSauce.com. You can also check out some of our old reviews to comic books, and we also have the podcast that you can link to from that page. Check us out on all of the different social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. You know how to get there. Just type in MCSOSS and you can find us there. And if you want some McSauce swag, as always, go to tpublic.com and you can find our page there where you can order a shirt, various different shirts in different color combinations, whatever your style or color preference. I'm pretty sure that tpublic has it for all your McSauce needs.
If anyone's interested in a specific McSauce t-shirt, if you're looking for a Theater Justice t-shirt, a Save It for the Podcast t-shirt, some McSauce themed t-shirt, let us know. Let us know what McSauce Nation is interested in adorning your body with.
Are there any stupid things out there, McSauce Nation, that we say all the time that you'd like to have put on a t-shirt? We can do that for you. Maybe we should even have sort of like a contest. Listeners submit ideas for t-shirts because we're lazy. So we need help figuring out some of the catchphrases or different ideas that we could put on a t-shirt. And we'll do all the graphic work, but you guys are our thought engines that can bring in all the good ideas for t-shirts.
Ian, that's a great idea. McSauce Nation, hit us up on all of the social medias. Let us know what t-shirt ideas you would be interested in.
Did you like the McSauce Tober designs with the haunted jack-o'-lantern faces? Did you like that? Hey, maybe we can bring that back. I know that Christmas is coming up, and we have a McSauce Christmas-themed logo. Maybe we could even put that up. You could wear it around the holidays with your family. Spill some eggnog on it.
If you would like a graphic depiction of the theatine from Theater Justice, copyright McSauce Productions, we can get a theatine design going on. Whatever you guys want, let us know. One last note for housekeeping. We are now also on the Satchel Media Player, S-A-T-C-H-E-L. All of the episodes are up there, to the best of my knowledge. I didn't scroll all the way back because we have about 1,000 episodes. But we are locked and loaded on the Satchel Media Player. If you're looking for some other way to listen to podcasts, they have an extensive library. They have a huge library on that player. I think you can search by location to see who's closest to you. If you want to listen to local episodes, to local podcasts to your area, which is a pretty neat feature. But we are now on there. All of our episodes are up. So download the Satchel Player, subscribe to McSauce, and
we'll try to link off to that on Twitter and Facebook, so that if you need to help finding it, We'll be your resource.
So let's jump into the Nick Soss State of the Comic Book Union. When's the presidential State of the Union? When does that happen?
That happens in January.
This isn't even...
No, it's not really.
We're a couple months away.
Yeah.
That sounds so crazy to me that like we are like 2 months away from January. I feel like January doesn't happen till January 1st.
It creeps up on you.
So, yeah, like Ian said earlier, we were determining what we wanted to talk about tonight. And, you know, we were going to do a what you've been reading, but realized we haven't really been reading much of anything. Hmm. I even skipped going to the comic book shop 2 weeks ago. I picked up two weeks worth of books this past Friday, and I blazed through all of them this weekend. And some of them I liked quite a bit, but some of them just lost me.
Yeah.
One in particular, and we're going to spoil some shit. One in particular is Heroes in Crisis. DC's Heroes in Crisis, written by Tom King, art by Clayman. Beautiful book. Clayman's artwork is stellar. Absolutely love it. But the story is... Man, it fucking sucks. It doesn't feel like it counts. It feels like an Elseworlds story because the story revolves around a place called Sanctuary that Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman put together. It's like on the outside, it's just a rickety farmhouse in middle America. In the middle of a like cornfield, but secretly it's a place where heroes of the DC universe can go and spill their innermost fears and emotions and
it's like a DC heroes like therapy
DC
session?
Yeah, and it's like a confessional and nothing gets recorded. Nothing gets recorded. Everything's deleted immediately. It's just a place where all the heroes of the DC universe who struggle with PTSD day in and day out from all the, all the traumatic things that they go through, they can go there. They can bare their souls, get this off their chest.
The disdain in your voice
to a Superman robot
is awesome.
Or it's not a Superman robot. You know, you never see the robots in two issues. Like I assume they probably look more like Kellex from the Fortress of Solitude. Okay. I think that's his name, Kellex.
You would know better.
And it's just so fucking corny. And I don't, like, it's just so you can't read an article about Tom King. Tom King's the writer. You can't read through one paragraph of an article about Tom King without hearing about how Tom King is former FBI, former Army Ranger, like, former, he's been in the deep guts of hell. And now he's bringing that to the pages of the DC universe. And I get it, man. Tom King, the guy, he's probably seen some shit. And, he is a better guy than me, for signing up and getting into that shit. I get it. But, like, they present the Sanctuary idea like it's been a part of... And this is a general problem I have with the DC universe right now. They present Sanctuary like it's been in the DC universe for years. Like, everyone's been going to Sanctuary for years. And, like, it's just a thing Tom King created, like, a month ago. Like, it has no... It just has no bearing. It's like when Marvel came out, the last couple years, and they're like, hey, here's your new diverse heroes. You love them now. They're your thing. That's how DC is treating this Sanctuary. It's not a grandfathered in idea. It's not something that was peppered in years ago, and now there's this greater story surrounding it. It's like, here it is, and it's how I feel about Scott Snyder and all this metal stuff. The entire DC universe is based around Scott Snyder's metal storyline, where the source wall breaks and there's all these other universes past all the universes we already know, and it's batshit crazy. And it feels like years ago, whenever Marvel had the Architects and whatever, you know, Fraction and Bendis and those dudes wanted, they did. And now that's where we're at with DC, where it's Snyder and King and Bendis, and whatever they want, it goes. It doesn't matter if it doesn't make sense, but what they want, it is canon, and you better fucking like it.
Do you think that is part of DC submitting to the will of Bendis? And because that's the common thread here, is that Bendis was part of the Architects over at Marvel, and now this new sort of initiative at DC. And I mean, it seems like DC gave Bendis a lot of money, gave him a bunch of pretty cool books, gave him an imprint, letting him do whatever he wants to do.
I don't think it has anything to do with Bendis, because this Tom King stuff is completely separate from Bendis. I don't know why DC is bending over and letting Tom King fuck them in the ass, because I've read a ton of Tom King books now, and they fucking suck. I don't get it. I don't get why Tom King is being given the DC crown to do whatever the fuck he feels like. Like, it's not... Like, Tom King goes out of his way to let you know he is a literary giant. No, I dare you to find me one Tom King issue that he doesn't pull some fucking Faulkner quote that is a narration through the entire fucking book. Some Robert Frost to carry you through your Catwoman thievery story. Like, he lets you know he is a learned man. It's so fucking pretentious. It's so pretentious. He does it in this Heroes in Crisis book. But the biggest problem I have with Heroes in Crisis is that it's presented like these heroes have nowhere else to go. They need to go to the secret club in Middle America and talk to a fucking robot to bare their souls. And, you know, Batman talks in that issue that you're holding, Ian, about how he needs to have a family, but every time he brings people into the family, they die. And he's so fucking sad. And I'm like, what bothers me about it is I'm like, hey, these fucking DC heroes, they've been fucking boys forever. You don't think Batman and Superman are close enough that they've had this talk? That Batman and Wonder Woman, or Batman and Aquaman, like, they're fucking boys. Like, they've had these talks. I don't think, and like, one of the characters in the book, you know, two, it's Wally West and Roy Harper. They're giving their confessionals in issue number one. Like, they were fucking Teen Titans together. You don't think those dudes, like, had other outlets than some weird fucking Superman confessional robot? I feel like this is some weird-ass Tom King PTSD real-life bullshit that he's just forcing into this fictional superhero world, and it doesn't fit to me. It just doesn't make sense. I hope this book... I hope this book does fucking garbage. I don't think I'm going to buy it anymore. And it makes me feel bad, because I like Tom... I like Clayman. Clayman's the artist. I think he does a really good job. And also in this book, like, Harley gets the drop on Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and that's some stupid shit.
Are you fucking kidding me? There isn't... I don't care what the situation is. There's no way a Harley gets away from those three fucking characters. Ever. Get out of my fucking face, Tom King. Please go work for a company that I'm not invested in. Next up on the docket is Action Comics number...
Yeah, there's more. Next up on...
This is gonna be a quicker one, maybe. You know, Bendis has been writing Superman and Action Comics. He started out with this ridiculously dumb character called Rogel Czar, who apparently is responsible for Krypton exploding. And, you know, I mean, you know, Superman's been around for 75 fucking years. No one's ever heard of this character before. But, here comes Brian Bendis. We're going to turn everything you know upside down. Fuck the past. It's all about the future and me and my paycheck.
Man, you really hate retconning things,
huh? Oh, well, this particularly because it really feels forced. But I've gone with it. I think Bendis is going to be able to pull up out of the Rogelzar stuff. I think it's, by the time we get his whole story, you're going to learn that, oh, that doesn't really affect what we've already known for 75 years. But what really bothered me in this issue, so a couple years ago, it was set up, there was a bad guy called Mr. Oz. And he'd show up in the background of issues, and you didn't know what his business was. And then all of a sudden he shows up, and it's Jor-El, Superman's father. And he's alive!
Gasp!
But he's all scarred, half of his hair is burned off, he's got a melted face. And he comes to Earth, and he causes all of these natural disasters and all of these wars. He's inciting riots between all these different warring factions, and like China and Russia and Israel and Jerusalem. And like he grabs Superman and he's like, this is what you're fighting for. You're better than this. Like you've been doing this for 75 years now and no one gives a shit. The Earth is still a shithole. Come with me. We can make the galaxy better. And Bendis leans into that and he's like, yeah, this is Jor-El. It's the Jor-El. He's back. And he's a monster. And he's just inciting war and terror over the entire globe. So then a few issues ago, Bendis is like, hey, Jor-El shows up. Lois and Jonathan Kent, Lois and Superman's son, they're just going to go travel the galaxy with Jor-El. That's no big deal, because Jor-El thinks he can help John learn his powers better than Clark can, because he's too busy helping the world, and they just think that's a good idea. Mm-hmm. That's weird to begin with. I'm like, what are you... And Lois is like, hey, this is a good idea. I can write my next book about going out in space and like seeing these different alien cultures and helping John and watching, keeping a watchful eye on Jor-El. He's got Superman's powers, Lois! You're a fucking human! What are you gonna do if he decides to fucking burn your guts out with heat vision?
Like, and say take all your this, son. Say all this stuff goes right. You don't think that writing the Space Odyssey novel will compromise Lois's journalistic integrity? Like, nobody's gonna fucking read shit anymore, Lois.
It's bonkers. So then, all of a couple issues ago, Superman hears a distinct heartbeat, and he flies down, and there's this woman in like a wig and a trench coat, and oh fuck, it's Lois. Lois is back. Lois didn't tell me she's back. Why are you back and you didn't tell me, is what Clark's saying. And then and Lois is essentially like, well, you know, I was out there and I was just putting John and Jor-El in more danger because they had to protect me, but John's fine. He's out there with your homicidal terrorist, maybe dad, but I'm just coming back. And then they're back, but they're not even living together anymore. They're married, but they can't. Superman can't be Superman, and Lois can't be a journalist while they're living in the same building. She needs to stay in this hotel, and he needs to stay in his house. It makes no fucking sense. None of this makes any fucking sense. And I was with Bendis this whole time, but this one issue, he just flips the whole fucking table, and he's like, fuck you. It's like he punked everyone that was on his fucking side when he came to DC. Like, what are you doing? People were like, hey, I noticed in all the solicitations for your Superman books, not a lot of John Kent. Like, not a lot of talk about Superman's son in here. Oh, he's going to be integral. Don't worry. Don't worry, DC fans. He's going to be integral. We're not getting rid of John. He just got rid of John. He sent him into space with a fucking murderer. And Superman and Lois are like, yeah, he'll be fine out there with Jor-El. We're totally forgetting that he murdered half the planet issues ago. That it's fucking bananas.
How long has this arc been going on for? Four months, five months?
Issue 1,000. We're in like...
4 months?
But it's been bouncing between that and Action Comics, so it's like 8 issues at this point. Yeah. But it's all fucking
I'm just assuming
wacky.
That he's probably plotted out at least a year's worth of stuff. Maybe there's going to be time enough for him to incorporate some of the stuff that you anticipated.
Yeah, I like the Rogelzar stuff. I don't think this Jor-El is going to be the Jor-El. I think by the time this is done, it's going to be Jor-El died on Krypton. This is some like ghost computer machination of something. But the fact that like Lois comes back to Earth and doesn't tell Clark she's back, but they're still married, they love each other, they fuck each other's brains out in that issue multiple times.
Yeah, and you hated this issue?
And
what
at the end,
fuck?
Clark's like, oh, so when are you coming back home? And she's like, I'm not. You can't do your work, and I can't do my work when we're in the same house. We need to be in separate places to do this work. And that, but they're still together. I'm like, break up! Just have them break up! That's what they're fucking doing!
Well, it's, maybe people just need their space, Paul.
But no, Superman and Lois don't need their space. This is so contrary to what their relationship has been since they got married in what, like 85?
Well, I don't think it was 85. Was it, did they get married in 85? They got married in the 90s, didn't they?
I think it was the 80s.
80s? Okay. I don't know. Maybe this is an attempt to progress their relationship, much like a lot of normal people's relationships. Humanize Clark Kent a little bit more with having some marital or relationship strife.
I get it. I get the devil's advocate that you're playing, but it doesn't make sense. The trajectory that these characters have been on from the Gleason Tomasi run before this up through this issue, all of it lines up. In this one, Bendis is just like, fuck it. I'm doing what I want to do. And it's so bizarre. Like, you can hear the needle scratch when you get to the point in this issue where Lois is like, meh, I'm just going to stay in this hotel. Like, oh, what? So, I mean, this is enough to get me to drop, like, both of these books. They're so I'm probably not going to drop Action, but I'm done with this nonsense.
It takes a lot for you
this
to drop
this fucking
stuff.
Superhero pussy bullshit and heroes in crisis.
You like your heroes to not have any fucking feelings. Just fucking handle it.
I like them to have feelings, but like,
It doesn't seem like you do, buddy.
It's too corny. Maybe if it was written better, I'd like it better, but it's so fucking saccharine sweet and corny and ugh.
Speaking of Superman and Lois Lane being married, in the comics...
About to get schooled, Ian.
They've actually been married 20 times in the comics. Jesus.
When was the first...
The first one was in 1950, April 1950, Action Comics 143.
Those goofballs,
I stand corrected. He didn't marry Lois Lane. He married a woman named Nikki LaRue while an extremely sassy Lois watched. Then five years later, in Action Comics 206, Superman finally married Lois Lane.
Not 200, not even 205, 206.
Yep. He must have gotten a divorce between April 1950 and July 1955.
So the first time he married her was in 55?
Correct. First time he got married was in 50.
I wish comics would go back to, like, we're going to do some big shit in, like, issue 6.
Yeah.
Like 206, just in the middle of a fucking run where it doesn't need to be a milestone issue.
I have no idea.
Nikki LaRue. I love her.
I've never heard the name Nikki LaRue. So, I mean, she...
Because Lois Lane wrote her.
They must have just
history.
Erased her out of DC history.
Much like they wrote Jonathan Kent out of DC history.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, the Nikki LaRue of his day.
So, comics are in a weird spot. I'm in a weird spot with comics right now. I'm a big DC guy. I'm having a problem with the direction DC as a whole is going in. But like I said before we started recording, I really like the Amazing Spider-Man run right now. It's been Nick Spencer is the writer. Umberto Ramos has been the artist for the last few issues. It's been kind of a cool book. It's kind of a, you know, it feels like the updated classic Spider-Man that Joe Quesada wanted after Brand New Day.
Yeah.
That just felt like old retread Spider-Man.
It was like we have a bunch of scripts from the 1980s that were shitty, but they have that distinctly 80s feel, and they just pulled them out of the drawer and just threw them down. It's hilarious, I think, that you, the resident non-Spider-Man fan, have kept up with that book, where I believe, Matt, I don't know, have you been buying it or reading it? I don't think you have.
No, I haven't.
I haven't either. I bought the first issue, was like, meh, and haven't looked back since.
Yeah, I think the first one was the weakest of the run so far, because they had to set everything up. But since, like, I think they've really settled into a pretty nice place. But you guys aren't reading shit. This is essentially the McSauce Fuck Comic Books podcast.
I don't think that's what's going on. I just think that...
Let's keep the hate going.
You had a heaping helping of hate.
I've never felt better.
Yeah, I'm just sort of uninspired and indifferent to comics right now. I don't think it's that I hate them and I don't want to read any of them. It's just when I went to take a look at what the offerings were, there wasn't anything that I felt was there for me or anything that I was really excited about. I have been keeping up with Doomsday Clock, but that's just a book that comes out once a month or once every few months. I'm not even sure the schedule of that. I still read Paper Girls. I like Saga, and I liked the Sean Murphy White Knight stuff. But all that stuff's really sporadic, and that's not how my comic book diet has been traditionally.
You are reading Doomsday Clock?
Yeah, I'm still reading Doomsday Clock, and I really like it.
Which comes out whenever the fuck it wants.
Yeah, like, and that's one book. That's just one book, and it kind of feels sort of like detached from time.
It doesn't.
So that's okay.
It doesn't matter where you are. If you ask about Doomsday Clock, Gary Frank appears and slaps you in the face.
I'm sure he's hard at work every single night, blasting out those panels.
Gary I'm Frank, sure he is. He hasn't even had time to tweet lately.
So, yeah, it's just very sporadic, the things that I find that really excite me or get me reconnected with comic books. And I don't know if it's just growing older, maybe not being as excited with the medium as I used to be. I know we've talked about this probably a bazillion times on this comic book podcast, about how we may or may not be as enthused as we used to be. But there was a time, in a very recent time, where I think all of us were completely invested and really into comic books and really, really anticipating a whole bunch of different things. It's the whole reason why we started this podcast, was it was coming off a time where I think we were all really, really excited about not just what Marvel and DC had, but Image had, Dark Horse. And I went through each and every one of those sites this past Sunday. I couldn't find anything that I really, really wanted to read.
Matt, did you have a similar experience?
I guess so. I find that whenever I want to read something, I look backwards rather than like new stuff coming out. Ian, you earlier brought up the point that, you know, maybe we're kind of outgrowing this stuff a little bit. And I would argue that we're not, because whenever I go back and look at this stuff, I love the old stuff. I love it. I love reading like those old Spider-Mans. I love reading my old Savage Dragons. I love reading even like old Walking Deads from the early part of this century. I think that stuff all kind of it's just all better than anything that I want to read now. And to me, that doesn't indicate a change in me. That indicates a change in the trajectory of the medium.
Isn't that how all medium heads, though? Isn't that how our general taste in music is as well? We had a little brief conversation about music off mic, and I think all of us, none of us are really connected to new music or anything like that. We like all the old stuff. Is that nostalgia talking?
Actually, I love new music. Yeah. I don't love new, like, top 40 shit, but, like, I love new music. Every Friday, I'm checking to see what new releases came out, and, you know, I have Apple Music, and they create, like, playlists for me based on, like, all the new stuff. I think Spotify is the same way.
Yeah, I lean on that new discovery thing, but I always find that the new bands that they find for me sound almost identical to the old bands that I liked. Maybe that's... And maybe that's just what it is. Maybe they're... Maybe what I need is a new discovery app for comics that will find the comics that I used to like and reprocess them and feed them back to me.
Well, I think the biggest problem is the comic book industry is run much more like a business now as opposed to trying to tell the best stories possible. Every major storyline and every major book is like, oh, it's coincidentally a 6-issue arc. Just the right size for a trade paperback so we can repackage and resell the same shit. 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, wasn't exactly done that way. I mean, sometimes, but sometimes not.
Which is witnessed from the previous conversation where Superman gets married in 206. Because, I mean, now, like, that makes sense because it's 6-issue arcs. But back then, 206 may as well have been 203.
Well, if Superman was going to be married to the vivacious Nikki LaRue, definitely would have happened on an even number or an anniversary or something like that.
Right.
But the way it happened back in the 50s, they were just pumping that shit out because they needed to hit a deadline.
Listen, I want to ask something. Who determined that, like, even... Okay, so... I guess they... What I was going to ask is, like, what determines, like, the significance of, like, issue 225? I guess that's sort of an anniversary issue, like, because things are kind of, like, commemorated in quarters in 25. You know what I mean? Like,
who decides now?
I guess, but, like, I guess
I
you're
think
not going to
get... generally accepted.
Right. I guess you're not going to get anything significant happening in issue 210. Even though it's kind of an even number,
yeah.
But like, it would be 225. That would be the one that not only does something significant, quote significant, because nothing significant happens in comics anymore, but maybe that's it. Maybe that's our general malaise is like
is
nothing,
that nothing significant
it.
Happens
right.
ever.
There's that, but like, it's where was I going with this? It was. Paul, help me out. I lost my train
of
thought.
You were on who decides. But, well, I mean, like, I feel like that might be a minor nit for us to pick, is that major things don't come out of nowhere anymore?
Well,
or is it overly pre-planned? Maybe that's...
It's very pre-planned, but it's still, like, it's still fake. I mean, I know it's all fake, but like...
Why, is it maybe our veteran nature that we know that this, like, on these milestones, this is when they're going to plan stuff out? Also, we read solicitations or we kind of know what's going on.
I don't read, like, any solicitations anymore. Yeah. And I used to devour those. I used to get a new previews and I would look at that thing cover to cover. I would get excited about everything that was coming out. Oh, what's the gem of the month going to be? And now it's like, I find out about it 3 weeks after it hits the shelves.
But is this like, I know you were hearkening back to, you really like all the old stuff that we used to like back when we were teenagers in our early 20s. But isn't that just straight up nostalgia? And isn't that just like we liked what we liked and it just happens to be that we come from the generation that all that stuff is vacuum sealed, and packed, and we can just break it out anytime we want. We can watch VHS tapes of old programs that we used to like, and we can have the comic books that we read as children, even a generation before us. Those comic books would be rolled up, put in pockets, and thrown in the trash.
I think that that's a good question, but my answer would be no. It's not just nostalgia, because I think we can discriminate between what is just nostalgia. We just like it because we liked that time in our lives, versus when we go back and look at something, we're like, man, this is really fucking good. These drawings, the way this is drawn, is really good. And it, like, where are the comics to, that look like that today? And they don't exist. And
I think we're not just liking it. I think you specifically draw a harder line between the style of artwork that you want to see and what you're going to get.
Well, yeah, that's fine. But, I mean, okay, so let me give you an example. NFL Super Patriot, one of the most popular superheroes here at the Mixos Comic Book Podcast. Paul, he was the...
he sure is.
The NFL superhero. He, like, I would like to go back and revisit those issues for nostalgia's sake. I would like to go back and revisit my early Savage Dragons because I like them, because I think they're good. Fair?
That's fair. But are you also saying that they're, like, the style of comic book illustration that we have now is subpar or something less than what we had back in the 90s? I would say that it's not.
Matt likes dynamism. Today's comics don't feature dynamism.
I would say in a sense that today's comic book art is lacking. I think from a technical perspective, it's sound, probably more so than it was back 25 years ago, but certainly not as exciting. It's colored better, but it's over rendered.
So you weren't feeling this Clayman Heroes in Crisis?
I think it's good art, but it is stiff. It is over rendered. And it's not particularly exciting, but that's not automatically a bad thing. You know, I think certain classic guys are kind of like that too. Like,
yeah, art is a hard discussion to have because it's so subjective.
Right.
Like, there must have been some fucking Kirby anniversary last week because my entire Twitter feed was fucking Kirby. And it hit me. I was driving somewhere and I was scrolling through Twitter and I was looking at this Kirby artwork and it hit me. I don't like Jack Kirby's art.
Yeah. Art Twitter will always remind you of anniversaries like that.
Yeah, it's all fucking blocky, and it's all these big old, like, heavy black splotches everywhere. Like, I don't
that's
like...
That's cosmic Kirby. That's like a thing.
Kirby Crackle. Yeah, I like that. But, yeah, I don't like Jack Kirby's artwork, and everyone just fucking gobbles his knob. And I'm like, I don't know, but I like the products of Kirby. I love Darwin Cook's art. I love Chris Samnee. I love Doc Shaner. And though, like, they are absolutely, you know, relatives of, you know, Kirby's style. But yeah,
John Byrne, Eric Larson were kind of the
especially
generation
early Larson.
Yep,
great stuff. The closer you get to now, the closer you get to, like, Chris Samnee now, everything is tighter. And, what am I trying to say? The proportions and everything.
Right.
Biology, anatomy, everything is tighter. It looks better.
Right.
In my opinion. But I'm also not, like, a 90s comic guy like you guys are. Like, so, like, I think I have I cast a wider net what I think is an acceptable piece of comic art.
Part of the problem for me is comic books do take themselves more seriously than they used to. And that's not just in the art department. That's when you are, quoting Samuel Taylor Coleridge in the latest Batman comic book by Tom King.
Fuck that guy.
Like,
I'm sure he's very nice.
I'm sure he's great in a firefight, but I mean, for reading his work, I don't want to do that. I've read some Tom King and I've liked none of it, I would say. I hate that there are characters that I love that I can't read because I don't like the direction, the writing, all that stuff. And I've never felt more trapped with characters than I have in these most recent years of comic book reading. The only one that I felt was at all accessible more recently was Superman, and I'm not up to speed on it, certainly. So your revelation, Paul, about the state of affairs of...
It has been. It was up Superman. Until this one issue. And then, like, the needle scratches, and you're like, what the fuck just happened here? Yeah. Everything was going swimmingly. Bendis was doing his own thing, but there's still a plan. Like, he knows what he's doing. Like, we're gonna... Clearly, this stuff isn't gonna be... Like, oh, he just wrote the real reason why, like, Krypton exploded. But yeah, this the Lois and Clark stuff is just bizarre. Feels weird. I feel like you're more critical of artwork. Like, I'm more critical of the storytelling. Like, I can get by with some mediocre art if the story's good. And that's the big problem I'm having right now in a lot of books I'm reading is that, like, the story is just so fucking weird between Tom King and, like, Bendis isn't even a big problem for me. I've been liking what Bendis is doing. You know, the Tom King issues I've read and the Scott Snyder issues I've read, I'm like, what are you guys fucking doing with the DC universe? I'm like, you guys even understand what this world is about? Like, it's like Scott Snyder wanted to do his own thing. And DC was like, or like Dan DiDio and Jim Lee were like, it's not really what this universe is all about. And Scott Snyder was like, but what if we crack the universe open and this other universe spills into the universe you're talking about and infects it? And they were like, nah, I guess. and then Scott Snyder was just like, off to the presses. And it's just so fucking, it's so bizarre. It feels so weird, and it's kind of odd, so Spider-Man now to me feels like more of a home than DC does, because there's new Spider-Man, new Marvel universe elements. Like right now, Kingpin is mayor of New York City. So that's a new thing. That's a new Marvel universe thing right now. But the way Peter's treated, the way Peter and Mary Jane are treated, you know, Peter, Mary Jane, and Spider-Man, their relationship to, like, their friends and Kingpin and New York City in general, it all feels like classic Spider-Man in a new situation. But all the DC stuff, it's like, here's Superman, and you don't recognize anything around him, because you don't. Bendis is in... Bendis has, I don't want to say injected so many new characters and situations into this mythology that, you know, you get like a page of Perry and Jimmy, you know, John's gone in space with crazy murder grandpap, you know, Lois is like, yeah, I love you, but we can't be around you. It's so unrecognizable. He's writing a good Superman, but nothing around it. It's the inverse of the Aquaman movie that's going to come out, where everything looks right out of the pages of classic DC comics except Aquaman. Superman is Superman, and everything around him is fucking bizarroverse. So, like, Spider-Man feels like the most classic telling of the character right now. Nick Spencer his writing gets a little long in the tooth, talks a little bit too much. But, like, it's just been a good classic superhero comic book. the first arc about how, like, him, like, Peter's personality and the Spider-Man personality, they get split. So, like, Peter doesn't have any of the spider powers, but he has all the responsibility. And Spider-Man has all of the Spider-Man powers, but none of the responsibility. Hmm. It felt like a very, it felt like a Silver Age throwback, some just bizarre, like, science experiment story. And it was really, really cool.
See, that's interesting that you say all that, because you constantly harp on, and this is, don't get defensive about this. You harp.
When do I ever get defensive?
You harp on whenever DC does this kind of stuff and they throw back, and Morrison does some weird Silver Age stuff. But maybe it's just the fact that you're a little bit disconnected and not so close to the Spider-Man and Marvel stuff, that a different turn down a different road that's a little wacky is still palatable to you, and you can still get down with that. Marvel.
I understand what you're saying, and I think you're right, sort of. But specifically with those, with that example, the Nick Spencer to Grant Morrison example, like, Nick Spencer's clearly just writing, like, a fun story. Like, what if, you know, with great power comes great responsibility is literally split into two people. That's the end of the thought process. But Morrison tries to do, like, tries to bring back all that,
everything
all
counts,
that
everything
silliness, but make it real and put way too much thought and effort into it. And he just bogs it down to the point where you read those Morrison books and you're like, am I stupid? Like, why don't I understand this? So, yeah, like, I don't know what specifically you guys are looking for. Like, I'm still firmly entrenched in superhero books, Marvel books, DC books. You know, I'm, you know, getting Saga.
I'm excited for the new Shazam title.
That should be right up your alley, because it's going to play out of the Geoff Johns, Gary Frank story that you loved.
Yep.
And I don't know how you feel about Dale Eaglesham's artwork. I like Dale Eaglesham. Eaglesham?
I believe it's Eaglesham.
Eaglesham?
A sham of an eagle.
Yeah, like that. I'm excited. I'm excited about that. You know, Geoff Johns knows how to tell a DC story. Ian, what are you looking for in comic books?
I don't know.
Done? You're done with comic books?
Done with comic books? I don't think so. I mean, I think that just my way that I handle comic books, I have hills and valleys, and the stuff that I like sometimes goes away, and I find some new, different kind of things that I enjoy. There was back in the late 90s, and Matt, I know that you mentioned that that's one of your favorite times, was the late 90s. For me, that was sort of like a weird time in my comic book buying life, because I'd probably say 97, 98, I walked away from almost all of the superhero tights and capes, traditional stuff. And what really brought me back was a lot of the Vertigo things, some Animal Man and Preacher and different stuff like that, really brought me back into the fold of comics. And I think that it usually takes something like that, something that I didn't expect or something that I didn't know that I wanted, to really reconnect me with the comics and like I was saying before, the stuff that I like right now, Paper Girls is one of the books that I read pretty religiously. This new Doomsday Clock thing, which I look at and I'm like, oh, that's just nostalgia talking to me. That's just my love of the Watchmen properties and the sort of alternate reality stuff that I do enjoy, sort of remixing the DC universe. That's what I'm looking for, and that's what's bringing me into that book, along with Gary Frank's really awesome artwork. White Knight is another thing I talked about before. That's another, like, remix of what we know of Batman and Joker and Harley Quinn, or multiple Harley Quinns. It's just a lot of sort of remixing of those tropes that I guess I like. Maybe that's what I'm looking for. Maybe I'm looking for like a different reimagining of some of the Marvel heroes that I really liked. When I got back into Avengers and New Avengers, the fact that they were just like, fuck it, let's take all the, like, Bendis was like, let me take all the characters. In retrospect, I see it now. He's like, let me take the popular characters and some of the characters that I really like and put them all on a team together. I felt that was a fresh way to do Avengers, and I was hooked on that book for years. I really loved all the David Finch, Bendis New Avengers, and I guess it went into Frank Cho did some of the work there too. Maybe I'm just looking for like a remix or of something, and it sounds like Spider-Man is something different. Maybe I should give it a little bit more thought. If Paul, you've enjoyed it as much as you have,
we've been conditioned to be dismissive of Spider-Man because it was not good for 10 years. That's a long time.
And there's different stuff, I guess, on the horizon. Fantastic Four's coming out, and I kind of want to like Fantastic Four. I want to be into that. An old school X-Men person. I still listen to X-Men centric podcasts where they break down entire runs of X-Men books, and I like listening to that shit and hearing, even though I disagree with.
There you go. You didn't outgrow it. It changed on you.
But maybe it's just nostalgia talking to me. Maybe whenever I listen to people talk about Rob Liefeld and Jim Lee, I'm like, oh, I remember that. I love that.
I don't think your statement of we like the same stuff, but the media is changing is the valid point for why we don't like what is being produced right now. I think
I don't think that's what I said.
Well, refresh me.
What I was saying was that I thought Ian was making the point that maybe we've outgrown, you know, the capes and tights, that kind of stuff, superheroes. But if I go back to some of the stuff that I really loved when I was younger, I still love that. Does that mean that I'm not into superheroes anymore? Or does it mean that superheroes have changed since then and I don't like what they've changed into?
Yeah, it's tough to separate the two things from us attaching so much value to it, because we've liked these superheroes for years and years and years and years, and sometimes it just blends into like, well, yeah, I still do. And maybe I'm just speaking for myself and that the things that I liked eventually just, I don't know if superheroes now were more like the 90s, if I would like them today, if there was an Image Comics revolution today. Take all of your favorite artists from today and move them to a new company and give them the reins and let them create superhero, you know, tights and capes centric books. Would we like that? Would that be something that we would be drawn to like we were back then? I know it's hard to make the parallels because we were 12 and we worshipped those artists.
I don't know. I don't know, because today's superhero comics, even at Marvel and DC, are not horribly different from what you might get at Image versus the way they were then.
Yeah.
You know, like, Image comics back then were doing things that you really never saw before in terms of dynamism and overall
bad artwork.
Overall, like,
over-rendered artwork.
Brutality. Yeah, over-rendered artwork.
Which was a negative for you half an hour ago.
Oh, no, I'm saying that over-rendered artwork is a negative. Did you take offense to that? That artwork today is over-rendered?
Some of it is. I think that's such a generalization.
Some of it is. I don't think all of it is.
Well, obviously I'm generalizing to make a point, but if you would like me to go through comic book by comic book, okay, that's
I'm
on the shelves.
I'm pulling it up here, and we're going to go and walk through it.
Let's go through every page of every comic book that came out this week. I'm generalizing, but I mean, to suggest that it isn't over-rendered compared to the loose, like, more kind of action-oriented style of, like, 25 years ago, if you're suggesting otherwise, you're wrong.
I hate early 90s artwork.
It's okay if you don't like it, but I'm saying the descriptions that I just gave you are accurate. You prefer a more stiff rendered piece of art that looks more static and posed. I like a more action-oriented, looser, and maybe not anatomically correct piece of artwork. Is that fair?
I don't even think that's necessarily fair, because a lot of those same artists have come along through the years and just taken the, like, the, I think a lot of it has to do with computer, the way that computers handle comic book art, and even the same artists take that same, the new techniques, and they're the same style. They're using the same style. Like, Eric Larson is the same artist, essentially.
Well, he's the same man, but
a lot different.
He's the same man, but his art is vastly different.
Yeah, but it's not like, it's not more over rendered. Like,
it's less rendered.
Like, it's even looser. So, right.
Well, apparently there's a balance, because if you go too loose, then it's not very good. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think that
I find it interesting, overall, though, if I may, I find it interesting that Paul seems to, it seems to have struck a chord with you a little bit.
I think overall artwork is a lot better than it was.
Very subjective
in the
statement.
Early 90s. Right. I mean, we're talking about artwork. All, like I said earlier, like, artwork's hard to talk about because it is all incredibly subjective. Like, if I had to look at fucking Rob Liefeld books for the rest of my life, I wouldn't read comic books.
Well, like, I was trying
to
provide...
But if you think, like, Clayman stuff is stiff, like, maybe you're not going to read comic books the rest of your life. So, but, like, I don't like Jim Lee's artwork. And Jim Lee is regarded as, like, one of the best in the business.
I think that's weird that you don't like Jim Lee's stuff anymore.
I guess I don't like Jim Lee's stuff is a bit extreme. Like, Jim Lee's stuff is perfectly fine. It's
he
good.
He goes in one sentence from, I don't like it, it's perfectly fine.
It's fine. It is. But, like, you know,
I think he may be oversaturated as, like, DC House style now. Or not even DC House style, but just, like...
We've seen it to death.
We've seen so much of it. And so... And since he is DC specific, and we've only seen those characters for 20 fucking years at this point, and it was so fun whenever he took over Batman. We never saw, but now
it would
be
such a big deal if he went back to Marvel. Could you imagine if he went back to Marvel?
Can he draw Colossus, man? Like, right. That would be cool.
What? At some point, he will do that, right? Like, he'll go.
I don't know, man. He's getting paid at DC.
Yeah, I mean, these guys run out of gas, and also, there's only so much power to be handed out from each one of these companies. I don't think...
It might not be a power thing as much as it is a money thing, though. If they throw enough money at him...
Do you think Marvel would do that at this point? Do they need to do that? Does Marvel need to do that?
Jim Lee is, like... He is the publisher. He's the guy at DC right now.
Right.
Like,
he's just, I think he's just happy to be doing... The DC thing. He's just happy. He has so much fucking influence.
Because the reins are off. He is a stallion in the fields. He can do whatever the fuck he wants. He can draw the same face and put different hair on it for the rest of his fucking life and get paid out the fucking asshole for it.
See, I still like Jim Lee a whole lot. And I went back and I read a lot of the, like, 80s X-Men stuff and recently, and it was all like his
nostalgia
art. But I like that stuff. I like the new stuff. Like,
I love Hush Hush is what got me into comic books, but then at some point I learned about comic books and I was like, oh,
this is
guy,
shit. I fucking hate it.
At some point I was like, oh, this guy draws one face and puts different wigs on them.
I can't even really argue with that. That is what he does, but it's pretty awesome. It's a good face. It's a good two faces.
Yeah, I mean, it looks...
What do you got? You got male, you got female.
It looks great. You got male face, female face, handful of different wigs.
Got a Joker nose that you fucking put on there.
His fucking wig library is the best wig library.
This is so dismissive. Poor Jim Lee.
Yeah, comic books have... I mean, maybe we're just in, like, the ebb right now. Where, you know, early 2000s, you know, when, like, Hush happened, like, we were all in, right?
Mid-2000s, I think that we were...
The JMS Amazing stuff, I mean, wasn't the Geoff Johns Green Lantern, wasn't that... That was... comics golden age, and now we're like now we're in Blue Superman, like we're in Ben Reilly it'll come back up again, yeah, right?
Ebbs and flows.
So maybe it's not so much about our taste and our age and what we're into. We're just not into what they're doing now. We're in the Ben Reilly Blue Superman era of this generation of comics.
So maybe it'll snap back. Maybe inevitably it has to snap back.
You know, history shows that it should. I hope it does.
We have no faith.
Do we want to hit on the lack of comic book media real quick before we go? We're always lamenting about how there's no good comic book resource.
Even though there is a site called Comic Book Resource.
I know that website still exists. I haven't been to Comic Book Resources in a long time. My go-tos were always Comic Book Resources and Newsarama. I feel like Newsarama just turned into a bunch of lists.
Listorama.
Yeah, it was.
And I
Listigo-go.
I got out of Comic Book Resources. It felt like there was always just too, like, I don't know what it was. I stopped going there.
They used to break their content up into comic books and film / TV, but I don't think they do that anymore. I think it's all just whatever.
Who? Comic Book Resources?
Yeah. Yep.
My favorite was always Comics Alliance, and I thought that they gave a different spin on the whole...
And didn't they merge or become comicbook.com or something?
They just were... The site has been... Like, it's still up, but they no longer post. Because I think that it may have been purchased and then just sort of shuttered. But they always looked at comics, I thought, more as art and culture than just like, well, here's who's going to play fucking this character in this show, or this is a solicitation. It was a lot of interviews. It was a lot of looks back at why certain comics did certain things. It was more of an examination of comics as... art form, I thought, and that's what I really enjoyed about Comics Alliance.
I think Newsarama still does a pretty in-depth look at comic books, and I think that's part of the problem I have with them now. Kind of ironic, because it's like too much actual comic book news on there. They're always posting like the solicitations.
Yeah. It's just dry.
There's still, like, you know, weekly reviews, but, like, I don't get a lot of shit. Like, yeah. They're posting, like, I get, like, one, I get two Marvel books, not including Infinity War. Infinity Wars?
You know, I think that's better than called. We do.
But, yeah, like, they're, like, you know, Punisher 11 and, you know, Doctor Strange, this number. And I'm like, oh, I don't fucking give a shit about these books I don't read. And then I'll scroll through like the reviews, and they don't review the stuff that I'm reading. So like there seems to be in-depth comic book stuff between like the reviews and solicitations on Newsarama, but like it's like that's not I don't know what it is. Like I don't need that information. I've never looked at solicitations. Yeah. I don't care what's coming out next. I'll get that in the ads, in the house ads for the books that I'm reading. I enjoy Nerdist. I've been reading Nerdist a lot. Nerdist barely gives you any actual comic book news, but it's a good place for me because they cover a ton of television. But they do tons of movie stuff, a lot of weird, like, weird but like really fun, like science videos, like how would, if Mjolnir were real, like how heavy would it really weigh, and what could the Earth really even support it?
Yeah,
and like kind of stuff like that, like videos like that, which are cool. They've got a Voltron Legendary Defender, you know, podcast and review on there. Like Nerdist right now is giving me my website comic fix. Matt, where do you go?
I would probably say Comic Book Resources, but I don't visit it very often anymore. I do tend to get a lot of news from IGN, even though I hate IGN. I for whatever
reason...
You're
an IGN boy.
I am, but I hate it. It's the weirdest thing. I hate the culture of the people that run the site.
You hate read it. You're like one of those people from the Howard Stern hate listen.
What does IGN stand for?
I don't know.
Internet
actually.
Gaming Network?
I don't know. That sounds okay.
Plausible, right?
I got news.
one of those two. So you're like a self-loathing IGN.
I think so. So I used to visit a website called GameStop, which
turned into a big fucking company. Now they sell games. Holy shit.
No, that's GameStop.
Isn't that what you said?
GameSpot.
Oh, I thought you said GameStop.
I might have said GameStop.
I remember GameSpot now that you mentioned
it. I always get the two, the retail company and the website, confused, but yeah, GameSpot was mm-hmm. the name of the website, and it still exists, but there was a bit of a fiasco when one of their reviewers, I believe, reviewed a game called Kane and Lynch and gave it like a 6 out of 10 or something, and was subsequently fired because I guess the Kane and Lynch people at IDOS, I think, had paid for some advertising or something to essentially ensure a good review. A 6 is not a good score. Like, they don't rate shit the way the McSauce Comic Book Podcast rates shit. We rate stuff on a legitimate 10-point scale, whereas like I think most people that use a 10-point scale treat it more like a letter grade. Mm-hmm. And so this game got a 6 and he got fired, and I was like, I felt like they lost all credibility at that point, because it's like, okay, clearly you just proved that your reviews are like bought and paid for. So I quit going to that website. This was probably like 10 years ago, and I started going to IGN.
When we first met?
Yeah, right. Yeah, Paul and I just celebrated our 10-year anniversary of knowing each other.
How romantic.
On October 6th,
2008.
I love that you guys have it dog-eared on the calendar.
But I feel like IGN was... It was, like, to me, a lesser... like, a lesser quality version of GameSpot. But at least they had integrity. At least their reviews were accurate, even though if I didn't necessarily agree with their assessment of certain things. So... But over the years, they've changed the talent on the website has changed, and it's gotten younger, a little less out of touch with me. And I just don't seem to align with those people like I probably used to. So I struggle to find a game website, and I don't know why I keep going back. Maybe it's because they cover a little bit of everything that I'm into, and it's like I don't have to go all over to find it.
Matt, try Nerdist.
But you just said they do a lot of TV, and that's not me.
They do a lot of everything but comics. If there's like big comic news, if it's like Bendis is going to DC, they'll cover it. But they have a lot of video game shit. I have to wade through so much video game shit to get to the stuff that I
have to wade through TV shit.
It'll be worth it, though.
Okay, I'll try
it. It'll be worth it.
All right, I'll try it. I will. I'll probably visit it tonight.
Hey, look, it even breaks it down so you can just find, like, the thing that you wanted, you know, if you want food, let or
me
music.
Let me
or...
see the screen you're looking at there.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, yeah.
It's got it all, Matt. Even Tom and Jerry.
It's got it all. It's got it now. Ian, where do you go now?
Oh, now? I don't really go anywhere now.
Huffington Post.
I would normally go to IGN, if at all. I really don't. I mean, Twitter is pretty much it for my comic book news. There isn't really a resource that I use to find the news that I'm looking for. So, yeah, pretty much Twitter and the wonderful comic creators that are on Twitter that just pretty much put the news out there anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, Twitter's pretty good news site. So that's going to do it for us tonight. Thanks for listening to the McSauce State of the Comic Book Union. You know, I think the bottom line tonight is that we're in a bit of an ebb for comic books, for the three of us readers. And if this episode hasn't proven anything, it is that we are a divisive group of comic book readers. We're all into different things. We're all looking for different things. And all of us can unanimously agree, comics are in a rough spot right now.
I would like to put out a listener challenge. Go back through the archives. Listen to each and every one of the McSauce podcasts that we have out there. Find all of the times that we've had this exact same conversation about how we're not feeling it. And then and then report back to me.
259 episodes, not feeling it. My name is Paul McGinty.
Ian Sharpley.
Matt Cassell.
We'll see you next time.